The World Bank thinks climate change is its problem as well.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There's news today the World Bank is moving away from funding energy projects involving coal, according to the bank's president. There will be exceptions made for the poorest places, but observers say the bank's rhetoric is becoming increasingly clear about climate change. From Washington, Marketplace's Scott Tong joins us. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, David.
So what did the president of the bank actually say?
Well, the president is Jim Yong Kim at the World Bank, and he says the bank plans to focus, quote, all our energy to funding clean energy projects in developing countries. For years, the bank has been criticized for pushing clean energy on one hand and at the same time funding brown energy, as in coal-fired electricity plants. So the change suggests the bank is going to lean toward renewable except in cases of, quote, extreme need.
Extreme need. Now, you're a reporter on our sustainability desk. Maybe you can translate, what does that mean, extreme need?
Well, the details aren't clear yet, but the world has more than a billion people who have no electricity. And in some cases, they may not have a choice between renewable and fossil fuels. Coal may be their only choice for viable energy, and the World Bank may be their only source of money. I spoke this morning to Duke University economist Billy Pizer, and he says these are really the tough choices.
The poorest countries frequently can't borrow from other sources except for the World Bank. So when the World Bank says they're not going to lend for a particular type of project, that means that kind of project is not going to happen at all in that country.
Now, David, this World Bank announcement may be significant, but keep in mind private sector money. A recent separate report suggests that private lenders give out some $80 billion every year in coal financing.
Now, just briefly, what's up with the timing of this?
Well, it comes just before a global climate meeting in Peru this week, and all of this is a buildup toward a big meeting next year in Paris, where countries are expected to consider long-term collective carbon cuts.
Nicely done. Marketplace's Scott Tong, thank you. The rise of single-parent households is a social, cultural, and economic phenomenon. This is at the center of a new study put out by the conservative-leaning American Enterprise Institute, which argues that stronger marriages could help bridge the widening wealth and poverty divide. Marketplace's Adam Allington has more now on the challenge of pinning down causes of America's wealth gap between the haves and have-nots. It's a bit like hitting a moving target.
Bradford Wilcox is co-author of the study. He says this retreat from marriage accounts for 32% of the growth in family income inequality between 1979 and 2012, and falls particularly hard on the poor and working class.
So not only are they earning less, comparatively speaking, but they're also less likely to pool their incomes and to build common assets as married families.
On average, Wilcox says married men earn about $16,000 more than their single peers, and children from married families are much more likely to get a college degree. But others say this marriage effect is a bit overblown.
The big changes in the distribution of income since 2000 have been at the top.
Christopher Jenk is a professor of social policy at Harvard. He says the massive growth in incomes by the 1% is a more plausible explanation for inequality.
It's a little hard to think that, well, that's all driven by single-parent families.
Jenk points to wage stagnation and fewer manufacturing jobs as other explanations for growing economic inequality. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Imagine a country being able to double the size of its economy using some swipes of a tablet or clicks of a mouse. The small Baltic state of Estonia aims to do just that. Next month, Estonia becomes the first country in the world to offer foreigners what the country has labeled an e-residency. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more.
Estonia is one of the most e-savvy and e-connected places on the planet. Skype was one of its innovations. Almost every home, office, and classroom has access to the internet. Now foreigners are invited to sign up, pay $64, and become an e-resident.
E-residency is basically a government-guaranteed digital identity.
Siret Shooting, Estonia's e-ambassador, says her country's allowing foreigners to acquire what every Estonian already has, a digital signature.
So a digital signature is an encrypted form, basically, which allows you to sign documents securely. And it is legally the same as a handwritten signature everywhere in the EU.
You sign by using a unique code along with your own smart card and reader. E-residency won't give you the right to live in Estonia or even to visit the country. But, says Tarvi Kotka of the Ministry for Economic Affairs, it will let you do business there.
You can open up a bank account, start a company, run a company, all that stuff.
Estonia is aiming to sign up 10 million e-residents. That would be 7 times the size of its physical population, giving a big boost to the Estonian economy.
There might be more customers for our banks, for telecom companies, for everybody.
Kotka claims e-residency will be totally secure. To qualify, you must supply biometric data like fingerprints and be vetted. Ian Bond, a former British ambassador to neighbouring Latvia, is not entirely reassured.
I would have some concerns about how easy it will be to vet exactly who is getting e-residency.
He's worried about e-money laundering. Living next door to Russia, he says this venture has plenty of risks.
Exploitation by organised crime is one of those risks.
But having once weathered a massive cyber attack from Russian hackers, Estonia reckons it may be small, but it can defend itself and its residents in cyberspace. At the European Desk in London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And a Russian spaceship with Italy's first female astronaut, Samantha Cristoforetti, docked safely this morning with the International Space Station. The cargo aboard that capsule includes 15 boxes of caviar, a lot of black tea, and this would be my requirement for a space journey, an espresso machine. The Italian coffee company Lavazza and an engineering firm Argotech conspired in the espresso, just what you want in weightless conditions, astronauts bouncing off the wall from caffeine. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.